Tennessee, you're in the 06010. Focus. Fantasy Focus.
Welcome into the Fantasy Focus. We are presented by Geico. Field Yates, Matthew Berry, Stefania Bell from the Palatial Estate. And yes, Matthew, what would you like to say?
I have a question for you.
Okay.
So when you say, our podcast is presented by Geico.
Right.
We're thrilled with that. I noticed you didn't say proudly. Do we think Geico is proud to present it or begrudgingly presenting?
No, I'm sure they're very proud to be presenting us, Matthew. I think this is a very popular podcast. Little to do with you, but
that is
Stefania
fair.
Daniel have made a measurable
fair.
Contributions over the
yeah,
years.
Yeah, that's true. No, the people love Stefania. That's very true.
Yeah, I think
people love Daniel.
Yeah. I think Kyle's rock solid.
Yeah, yeah.
I have my moments.
They like you. They tolerate me.
I got it. But the real star of the show is probably not Cool Keith. I mean, even though he's not here right now, like not Cool Keith is a lot of people like not Cool Keith.
Watching daily, he's so nice.
He's the greatest.
Yeah, he is.
I feel so bad he can't be here with us.
He'll
super nice Keith just isn't a good nickname. That's the only issue.
No, I agree.
Super nice Keith.
I think not Cool Keith, while inaccurate, in my opinion,
correct,
has a little bit more, it sort of rolls off the tongue. Daniel, what would you like?
I just want to say, like, if super nice Keith, if I could hang out with a guy named super nice Keith or not Cool Keith, I would always pick the guy named not Cool Keith every time. Super nice Keith just doesn't sound like fun to hang out
exactly.
with.
Exactly. That's the point.
Yeah.
Right. That's why we went with not Cool Keith.
Yeah.
I don't know if I...
But if you wanted to make an accurate nickname...
Super nice Keith is totally fits.
Yeah, yeah. Super nice. Super nice and polite.
Yeah.
Do you guys
well dressed.
Do you guys have any thoughts on Keith Lee's Raw debut? Figured that would be some crickets there. You guys got to get educated on Keith Lee. That dude is the man. Him and Keith Lipscomb, the two greatest Keiths that we know. Let's get right into it with a little bit of news or noise.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Read all about it.
News or noise.
Loud noises!
All right, so yesterday, the great Vaughn McClure, who covers the Falcons for us here at ESPN, had an interview over the phone with Falcons offensive coordinator Dirk Cutter, and there's been all kinds of talk about how much Todd Gurley will play this year for the Falcons within the course of each game. And Cutter explained, and if you read the article in full, which you should, that his vision is for Todd Gurley to get a minimum of 15 touches per game and a maximum of 25 touches per game. Can I go to Stefania here, Dino? Can I ask Stefania?
Absolutely.
Because Stefania, I want to know about what you thought. Is this news or noise that Dirk Cutter has a vision for a weekly role of Todd Gurley for 15 to 25 touches per game? Is that even possible?
I think it's news because we now know what the Falcons would like to do, and that doesn't surprise us. But I agree with you. People should read the entire article because the headline that was clipped about 15 to 25 touches was immediately followed by provided the running back's knee can stay healthy throughout the season. And after all, weren't concerns about his knee, how he got here from Los Angeles? Look, Dirk Cutter back in May said he knows that Todd Gurley can still do it. It's just a question of how often he can do it. And now we're hearing reports about how good he looks in camp, that he's got that explosiveness back, which was missing last year. But when Dirk Cutter went on to explain about the low end of 15 and the high end of 25, he said it depends where you are in the season and the wear and tear on the knee. Last year, Gurley averaged just under 17 touches a game, and it wasn't rock star material, so consider that.
All right, Matthew, news or noise here? We'll go back to Stefania in just one moment. News or noise for you quickly on Todd Gurley and the potential for a 15 to 25 touch per week role.
I think as long as he's healthy. I mean, we should change his name to Todd Gurley as long as he's healthy.
Okay.
Because
we can do that.
Because I don't believe there is tremendous competition. I will say that I think Ito Smith gets more work than people are necessarily expecting.
Okay. I think it's Brian Hill. He's been the star of training camp for Atlanta.
Fair.
According to everybody who's there, the coaches, is that Brian Hill's the guy.
I understand. I'm going with Ito.
Okay,
but I understand that it may start out that way. Regardless of whether it's Brian Hill or Ito Smith, I'm not a Brian Hill guy.
Sure,
okay,
that's fine.
Which
I mean, he's still a backup. We're talking about a backup,
right? Exactly.
But
so regardless of whether it's Ito or Brian Hill or somebody else, the fact is that my expectation is that Todd Gurley is going to get the majority of work in that backfield. They pass the running backs quite a bit. And so we expect him to be used in the passing game a lot more than he was last year. They just didn't use him at all in the passing game. Although we've seen Gurley be successful in the passing game in previous years with the Rams. So the question is just whether he can hold up for a full season, because they don't have a lot of depth behind him.
Yeah. So I think you and Stefania are sort of in lockstep here. It's about how many games, not whether he can get 15 to 25 touches in one specific game. But Stefania, let's go right back to you, because A.J. Green ran some routes this week, and according to head coach Zach Taylor, he's expected to practice today, Wednesday. Is that news or noise?
I think it's news, because A.J. Green obviously has not been on the football field since 2018. And a year before that, he had an issue with the hamstring, and it was a hamstring tweak in practice that kept him out. Now, the good part is he was back catching balls within a couple of days, and as you said, expected to practice in pads today. But of course, we're going to keep an eye on this. It's always news when it's a soft tissue issue with A.J. Green. And if I could field, I'm just going to pull a Matthew real quickly and go back to Todd Gurley, because I want to point out to everyone, he is on a load management program with Atlanta. They're obviously, it's not like he's free and clear. They're monitoring his workload right now, and I expect that to continue throughout the year.
Stefania, appreciate that. And I'm going to call this, and I hear you on the Todd Gurley thing, but to bring it back to A.J. Green, I'm going to call it news. And here's why. I think he's going to wind up being a value this year. Last check, his ADP was hovering around wide receiver 28, maybe 30. So you're talking about a player that isn't even drafted, being drafted as a starter. I'm basically tossing out 2019. I think extenuating circumstances were as much a part of why he didn't return as the ankle injury itself. And we are often to remember or to forget how talented a player can be with just one bad year. I think that's the case with A.J. Green. He also needs to have a massive year to get that final lucrative contract that he is looking for. I'm talking myself into A.J. Green and this entire Bengals offense for fantasy more and more by the day. Right back to Stefania, because we have another receiver who unfortunately is now going the opposite direction. Mike Williams, the Chargers wideout who we discussed yesterday, Stefania. We got a bit of an update on his status. It sounds like week one is in question for him.
Absolutely. I mean, Anthony Lynn said it's possible he could miss week one. This is news, because it sounds like they are preparing to not have Mike Williams available. Look, it's probably going to take a few weeks for him to recover to the point where they want him in a game. So already you're planning on Mike Williams potentially missing time with this AC sprain.
All right. Matthew, you believe this to be news or noise?
Mike Williams?
Yeah.
Absolutely news.
Okay.
I mean... Look, yesterday we talked about Keenan Allen, and one of the arguments against Keenan Allen, because we all agree on the talent, was volume. That we just think this is going to be a lower volume passing attack than it was under Phillip Rivers. But if your target tree is suddenly like Hunter Henry, Keenan Allen, and Austin Ekeler out of the backfield, suddenly becomes a lot more interesting. If Mike Williams is going to miss 4 to 6 weeks, if he's going to miss significant time, I don't think there's anyone else on that team that scares me in terms of taking target share away from Keenan Allen. Yeah. And I didn't even think that Mike Williams was going to be a big target monster, but he was a legit threat, yeah. Right? And we know that Tyrod likes to chuck it deep on occasion. And so I think it's a downgrade a little bit for Tyrod, but I will say that, yeah, Keenan Allen, I think you move up a few spots.
All right, a lot of news so far this morning. One more for you, Stefania. You don't have to answer this if you want to excuse yourself from 49ers injury updates, but their first-round pick, Brandon Ayuk, their second of two first-round picks, as we discussed a couple of days ago, now has a hamstring issue. What's the latest on him, and is it news or noise?
I think it's news. He'd been very impressive in camp, and we thought he was potentially going to get a lot of utilization at the start of the season, given the injuries to Deebo Samuel. And now there's a question as to whether he'll be ready for week one. We will see. But when you hear the 49ers are working out a whole crew of receivers, some of whom people haven't heard of and the names aren't familiar, it tells you that they're concerned about their depth at the position.
I think this news for Stefania's team is actually noise to me. And here's why I'll say that, is that even with the injury to Deebo Samuel and Jalen Hurd and some of the other players that were banged up in this training camp, we hadn't yet gotten to the point where we were saying, yeah, Brandon Ayuk is more than a late round flyer. So this sort of, to me, pushes him to like further into almost undrafted player territory then further towards, like, let's say rounds 12, 13-ish, right? So I just think that while he certainly could become fantasy relevant this year, out of the gates with the injury, the uncertain offense, which, as we know, they've been so good on the ground, they don't necessarily need to light it up weekly. To me, it's noise, even though there is news involved.
I have a semi-controversial take here.
Okay.
And I'd love Stefania to weigh in on this and give me her opinion here. But I think that after George Kittle, the late round pass catcher that you want to take a flyer on is Deebo Samuel.
Ooh, interesting.
That I would rather take a late round flyer on Deebo Samuel and coming back in a few weeks and being productive, you know, especially over the second half of the year, than Brandon Ayuk, than Richie James or Kendrick Bourne or Jordan Reed, who looked good supposedly at practice yesterday. And I want Stefania's thoughts on that statement.
I think if you just prepare that you would not have Deebo Samuel for the first 6 weeks, and just assume that he's going to stay on the PUP list, and that means minimum of 6 weeks before he'd be back, that's how you have to operate. And if that's worth it to you to take him in the late rounds for that, then the upside is definitely there. We know what he can do on the field. I like Ayuk, and I still think he will be utilized, but I agree with Field. If it's a 10-team league, I'm probably not using a spot on him.
But wouldn't you rather have 10 weeks of Deebo Samuel than 16 weeks of anyone else that isn't named George Kittle on that passing offense?
My answer is yes. At last check, and these things move quickly, Deebo Samuel is still being drafted relatively high
amongst
wide receivers.
That's what I was going to say here. Right now, his ADP is 10th round. He's wide receiver 35.
So give me a couple names right behind him. Right.
That's too high for me.
So what range are you – when you say late round, based on where he's going, like what would feel comfortable for you if you felt –
I think I have him – I don't have my rankings memorized, but I believe I have him in the wide receiver 40-ish range.
42. Wide receiver 42.
There you go. Thank you, Thirsty Kyle.
I got you.
By the way, I was – yeah, there you go. So, yes, wide receiver 42 is where I'm comfortable taking him.
Okay, fair enough.
That's the answer.
There are 41 wide receivers I like more than Deebo Samuel at the moment. Yes. Sure.
I hope that we don't talk to Stefania about injuries regarding the 49ers for a long time. We'll be back to her in just a couple of minutes. But first, it is time now for another edition of Double Trouble.
Double Trouble.
Double, double.
Trouble, trouble.
Double trouble.
Double, double.
Trouble, trouble.
Double trouble.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
By the way, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe today is the last day of Double Trouble. I believe we have made it through every team except for two, the two that we're going to talk about today.
Amazing. We speed dating.
I love correcting you when you're wrong, Matthew, but you are not wrong about that one.
That's like the most impressive poll you've had in a while.
Yeah. If only your trivia game was on point.
You know what? Check the standings, because it's not like anyone else has been lighting it up. Stefania's gotten a little bit of a hot streak.
We'll get to that at the end.
Stefania's got a little bit of a hot, but it's like, you know what? Like,
honestly, we
whatever,
are like,
Johnny Football over here.
I know.
Like, for the season.
We're like the eight teams left out of the NBA bubble. Like, you're the Cavs. I'm like, I don't even know, some deplorable Pistons team. Sorry.
I'm sorry. That's fair, though.
Man. Anyways, let's play some Double Trouble. Our last edition of Double Trouble, as Matthew mentioned, we were able to get through these teams so fast.
I want half a trivia point for that.
Okay, that works. Let's begin with the defending reigning Super Bowl champions, the Kansas City Chiefs, who had just an incredible offseason in so many ways. Let's dive right into the $500 million man, which, of course, is Patrick Mahomes. We're not going to quibble too much about where he ranks. We have him all at number two behind Lamar Jackson. But at what point, Matt, this is the question.
I think there's actually two questions. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I was going to say, we all have him at two, but he's going at one overall in the ADP.
Which is interesting. He has actually gravitated ahead of Patrick Mahomes, which I have a theory
Lamar
on.
Lamar Jackson.
I'm sorry, ahead of Lamar Jackson. I have a theory on that.
Okay.
We have a recency bias thing that impacts our life in so many ways, not just fantasy football. But in fantasy football, like, more recently, we saw Lamar Jackson struggle and Patrick Mahomes be a superstar. One was a great player in the playoffs, won the Super Bowl MVP, has a $500 million contract now. The other got bounced in the first round. But if you just go back and look at last season, Matthew, it wasn't close. Like, it was not close at all, right? And as a matter of fact, and so I think these two questions kind of tie to each other, because the question is, A, should he be going first? And then I think B is, at what point are you taking Patrick Mahomes? Right now, as you mentioned, his quarterback one, and his overall ADP is somewhere around 16 to 17. Again, these things are updating in real time, so obviously these are subject to change maybe by the time that you listen to this podcast. But how soon is too soon on Patrick Mahomes?
I think the first round is too soon on Patrick Mahomes.
Okay.
So I have him at quarterback. I have him at 27 overall.
Right.
So I have him towards the end of the third round.
Mm-hmm.
And my rankings are done for ESPN standard leagues, 10-team leagues, one quarterback leagues.
Yep.
So assuming we're talking about that, I have him as a late third rounder.
Okay.
But if you take him in the end of the second, do I think you've completely, you know, jobbed your draft? If I think you've completely, like, you know, butchered your draft, I don't.
Yep.
Look, here's the thing. You're not going to lose your draft. Like, when you finish your draft, you're not going to sit there like, oh, you know what I really made a mistake on? Drafting Patrick Mahomes.
Correct.
Like, you're not losing your draft by drafting Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson.
Yep.
They're awesome. They're super studs. It's all about opportunity cost. And I will say that, you know, Daniel, when we did the draft in the fantasy football marathon, and you didn't, I don't think you drafted Mahomes, you drafted Lamar Jackson, but I think the point is still relevant here. What Daniel did is, what pick did you have in the draft? It was a 10-team draft.
It was a 10-team draft, correct. I had pick number 4.
He had pick 4. And so if you, there's just a way in terms of roster construction, if you want, right, where you can, if you get one of those first 4 picks, if you get what we feel to be a rock solid, safe running back, right? Yep. You get CMC, you get Barkley, you get Zeke, you get Kamara, right? And I think if Dalvin Cook signs a contract, we would argue he's in that tier as well. So if you do that, and then you come back around, and in your next 2 picks, you take a tight end, you take Travis Kelce, and then you get Mahomes in the third, or vice versa, that's a really interesting roster construction because, again, wide receiver is so deep, and I think there's a chance that there's somebody decent as your number 2 running back in the fourth, or you can get a decent wide receiver there. And so I just think that's something to think about there.
Yeah, so I agree on the roster construction. I don't have anything to dispute there. I think where I'm more focused on Mahomes right now is simply to your point that, like, if you're taking him at anywhere from, like, 17 to 22, it's the opportunity cost of who you're bypassing, which,
correct,
based off ADP right now, is that you are potentially passing up on someone like Julio Jones or even his teammate Tyreek Hill based on ADP. Again,
sure.
Right now, Davante Adams.
Yeah.
Austin Eckler. And so if we're comparing the merits of Mahomes and Jackson, something you have to decide is what is more repeatable. Patrick Mahomes and what he did in 2018 when he had 50-plus touchdown passes and I think 4,500-plus passing yards, or Lamar Jackson last year where he obviously had bundles of passing yards, but what really was the key that turned this engine on was the 1,000-plus rushing yards. I would argue, and maybe neither of them ever repeats those 2 seasons, I would argue Lamar Jackson is a greater threat to go for 1,000-plus rushing yards and 30-plus passing touchdowns in a year than Patrick Mahomes is to repeat the 2018 season.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and it's why I have Lamar Jackson at 1 and I have Mahomes at 2. But I will say that I think if you're sitting there going, which one of these guys, if I tell you one of those 2 guys, the bottom completely falls out this year, I would say it's Lamar Jackson. I think Patrick Mahomes has a higher floor.
Oh, yeah.
Because there is a concern. I think we've seen this with rushing quarterbacks. You've seen it if you go back to, you know, Michael Vick, if you go back to RG3 in his rookie years, which was so magical. Like, we have seen this before where quarterbacks that get a ton of fantasy points with their legs have regressed, especially if they're scoring rushing touchdowns.
Mm.
Now, Lamar Jackson is something special. And it's not just the rushing touchdowns. As you pointed out, it's the rushing yards. And we obviously, look, I mean, the guy's a human video game, right? But
right.
But that's what I would argue there's more a concern of the rushing. If I think there's a higher floor for Mahomes, if that makes any sense, than Jackson. We have a longer track record, obviously, 2 years versus 1.
I want to close this conversation by saying something very, very clearly. There is 0 negative things that I can think of about Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson as football players. And really as humans too, right? So when we are making
100%
points.
100%
agree. I know you do. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, before someone misconstrues, like me saying I think 1,000 rushing yards and 30 passing touchdowns is more repeatable for Lamar than Mahomes' 2018 season is, oh, you know, Lamar's definitely better than Mahomes. Come on, guys, relax. We're just saying that if you're trying to separate the, you know, 0.001% quarterbacks, that's how you're going to have to do it.
When you do rankings, you have to make a call, and we've each made that call to put Jackson over Mahomes,
yep,
and that's among our reasoning here. But again, I have them as late third rounders. That's where I have them, but I don't think you're completely, you know, messing up your team if you draft them late second. But you're asking me what I would do? What I would do is I would take them in the late third round. I think that the argument for taking them as high as they're going isn't just that they're going to finish as the number one or two quarterback. I think this is an important point. It's not just they're going to finish as the number one or two quarterback. It's that they're going to finish significantly ahead of everyone else, because that's what Lamar Jackson did last year.
Correct.
He was not only the number one quarterback, he was the number one quarterback by like 40-something points.
Yep. That's I completely agree with what you're saying. This is all back to, it's a process-based decision. It's not simply a results-based decision. All right. Let's talk about Travis Kelce.
Sure.
Travis Kelce, the only tight end ever to have four straight 1,000 receiving yard seasons. He also, by the way, during each of those four seasons, had 80-plus catches. The guy lives in the end zone. He's supremely rich after that incredibly well-deserved extension. Another player that we're asking, where do you take him if he's still on the board? And, like, should he be going earlier than Patrick Mahomes, his teammate?
I have him ranked that way, so yeah, me sure. Too. Again, depth of the position. So, you know, Mahomes is awesome. He's amazing. But you've also got Lamar Jackson. And I'm very high on Dak Prescott this year. And by the way, if you leave your draft with Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson as your starting quarterback, you're going to be just fine. Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, you're going to be just fine. There's obviously so many good quarterbacks. But here in Travis Kelce, who's been the number one fantasy tight end for four straight years, it sort of feels like that run that Antonio Brown was on for so many years, Field. It's just like, I think Travis Kelce, especially given the fact that he's still playing for Andy Reid, he's still playing with Mahomes as his quarterback, Travis Kelce is the closest thing to money in the bank in fantasy football this year, other than maybe Christian McCaffrey.
I think he, Michael Thomas, and Christian McCaffrey are the three surest things in fantasy football this season. And Daniel was actually pressed into this decision himself. And Daniel, let's take a look at your roster. If we can flash it on the screen, I'll spell it out for those that are listening on the podcast here. But you had to make this decision during the marathon. You had pick four, as Matthew referenced. You went Alvin Kamara at four. And then what was your thought process at pick 17?
So at pick 17, I saw that Travis Kelce was still on the board. And my thought was, given the depth at wide receiver, I could be able to take what is, in essence, a wide receiver there and shore up the number one spot at tight end. So now I've got a top five running back, the number one tight end, and I was hoping that either Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes would make it back to me in the third round so that I could have the number one or number two quarterback. And now the first three picks, I feel like I've got the one of, if not the best at the position with those three picks. And then follow that in with
and
the
wide
receiver.
And that's what you did.
Yeah.
You grabbed Lamar Jackson in the third round.
Yep.
And then coming back around in the fourth, he got Leonard Fournette. Now, I am not a huge Leonard Fournette fan here, but at the end of the fourth, I don't mind that ADP, and there's other running backs there. And then what's interesting is like, okay, so this is what I was getting to when I was talking to Mahomes and Pat and roster construction, right? And I think this only works, and it's going to be tougher to do in 12-team leagues, but in 10-team leagues, this will absolutely work. Is like top four running back. He's got the best tight end. He's got a top two quarterback. He's got a top 20 running back in Fournette-ish.
Yep.
I mean, again, like,
give or take.
You know, I'm not a huge fan. But whatever, moving on from him, a lot of people certainly like Fournette this year and can't argue with the ADP. Then you look at who his wide receivers are. You're like, okay, he doesn't take a wide receiver till round five. Robert Woods, Tyler Lockett.
Landry, yep.
And who was your third guy?
Jarvis Landry.
Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, three guys who could easily lead their teams in catches.
Yes.
Yeah.
Robert Woods, who was like a top 12 fantasy wide receiver last year. Tyler Lockett, who was a top 10 wide receiver last year for a long period of time before he got hurt. And Jarvis Landry, who's always underrated and will absolutely out-earn his ADP. So that's my point, is like, again, top four quarterback, top four running back, top two quarterback, top number one tight end, and a very strong wide receiving core. I love what Daniel did in the draft, actually.
So that is a Travis Kelce catalyzed draft strategy there that Daniel showed you that is exemplary of what Matthew is discussing. Last quick thing is, I love what Daniel said, is that like you're basically getting a wide receiver. I wonder how his ADP would be manipulated if his position was wide receiver and not tight end. I think there's a case that he would be going closer to like 12.
I think this has been done, and Thirsty Kyle, you pop in here if you have the number, but I want to say, like, if you counted him among wide receivers, he's a top 20 wide receiver. You know what I mean? He's easily, you know, a top 20 wide receiver, like all 4 years.
I was gonna say, each of the last three seasons, he's been a top 25 flex player, which basically excludes everybody but quarterbacks each of the last three seasons.
Right, and you're getting him obviously at a rare position there. His ADP overall is 20th overall into the second round. I am slightly higher than that at number 17 overall.
I think it's a good value there at pick 20. I feel like there's been no player we've discussed more in this podcast besides...
And I would also say, if I can just one last thought on Kelce, I have him at 17 overall, but if you are at the end of a long run... You know what I mean? Like if you're at the if you're picking at the back part of your draft,
okay,
and there's been a crazy running back run and you don't love the running backs ahead of you, like I'll just say this. Like, so I'm pick 16 in our 16 team War Room League draft.
Mm-hmm.
If the first 15 picks are running backs, Kelce is very much on my radar.
Yeah.
At pick 16.
Okay. That's good to know. File that one away. Kyle, what's the Travis Kelce stat? You just texted me that you have it.
Since 2017, he would be a top 8 receiver on both a per game basis and total points.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, if you're talking about like we're making the case for Chris Godwin or Mike Evans in the early to mid portion of the second round, could do the case. Same thing with Travis Kelce. Let's move on to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who I really believe we've talked about as much as basically any player thus far in the podcast this season. So maybe we don't need to belabor it, but we're all buying the hype. We agree on this. You have him as a top 6 running back, I believe it is. I have
top 6 player overall.
Top 6 player overall. I have him at number 7 overall. Personally, one spot behind Derrick Henry and one spot ahead of Michael Thomas. So just a refresh. We don't need to bicker too much over this, but just a refresh of why you're so bullish on Clyde Edwards-Helaire for those that may not have listened to it. And then if there is, who would you pick up as a Chiefs insurance running back?
Okay, so fantasy success comes from two things, talent and opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the talent. I mean, you know, a stat we've used quite a bit, you and I both have, but he's the first player in SEC history where there are over 1,000 rushing yards and over 50 receptions in a single season. He did that for LSU last year. It's nothing short of special. Andy Reid compares him favorably. You know, Andy Reid, who's a very good talent evaluator, in addition to many other things, compares him favorably to Brian Westbrook, who from 04 to 08 under Andy Reid was the second best running back in fantasy. Look, Andy Reid has made, you know, let's call it pedestrian running backs. You know, you think about Coral Buckhalter or Sharkhandrick West or Spencer Ware. Like he's made, you know, kind of middle of the road running backs very fantasy relevant. And so now you get somebody who many talent evaluators, not in the NFL, not on the Chiefs staff, but just in general, said this guy's a first round talent. This is one of the best running backs coming out this year, if not the best. And now he goes in the first round to Andy Reid and the Chiefs offense. We know how productive the lead running back of the Kansas City Chiefs can be under Andy Reid. With Damian Williams opting out, the role is all his. Lou Riddick, our colleague, who has the number one pick in the War Room League draft, has said fantasy leaguers should draft him number one overall over CMC. So, yeah, full speed ahead. Great player and a great opportunity. Very exciting. Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, not. I don't think right now there's a clear-cut insurance policy. Darrell Williams and Darwin Thompson.
Who's was going to say is if you wanted to take a flyer on an insurance policy. Now, I know there's a lot of buzz for DeAndre Washington, who was Patrick Mahomes' teammate at Texas Tech, who the Chiefs chased in free agency, played well for the Raiders last year. But I just want to give a shout out to Darrell Williams, who last year got 3 different games with double-digit touches.
Mm-hmm.
And in those games, he averaged 15.6 fantasy points per game.
I've made it clear where I feel on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But just a thought here.
Yes, sir.
If we're touting the buzz of backup running backs to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, isn't that also acknowledging a bit more risk? Like, how many Darrington Evans conversations have we had so far about, you know, in Tennessee? Or how many Deion Lewis, you know, positive notes have we passed along behind, say, you know, do you understand? You get what I'm saying, right? I mean, like, we got a few different guys.
I do. My answer to that is that I don't think we're really touting. So I would, you know, you just asked me a direct question. Is there an insurance running back? So I'm answering your direct question. The other thing I would say there is that Ezekiel Elliott has never missed a game due to injury in his NFL career.
Sure.
I still think Tony Pollard is very much worth a flyer late. Okay. You know, like I still think, look, you know, that we haven't talked about a news or noise, but it looks like Mike Davis has passed Reggie Bonifin to be the backup to Christian McCaffrey in Carolina. If you're looking for insurance on CMC, I've talked up Latavius Murray, who had over 30 fantasy points in the 2 games that he filled in for Alvin Kamara last year. So, I agree with you. We haven't had a lot of Darrington Evans conversations, but at least there's some track record on Darrell Williams. If you think about who's there in Kansas City, and if anything were to happen to CEH, because injuries happen to every running back, you think about who's there. DeAndre Washington, brand new to the team. Darwin Thompson, has yet to be able to sort of find the field. Darrell Williams got some work there last year. And what's most important to Andy Reid, right? Protecting his $500 million quarterback. Who understands the pass protection? My belief is that if there's a running back, at least early, if there's a running back out there that isn't CEH, I think it's going to be Darrell Williams. And so if I'm in a best ball league, I'm in a deep league, if you're looking for who you're going to hand, who are you going to, like, you know, use as insurance on CEH, like, you can absolutely make a case for DeAndre Washington, and it wouldn't be surprising if he's the guy over the second half of the year. But I'm just saying, like, Darrell Williams, I think, is a guy that no one's talking about and I think is sort of interesting. And I do not believe talking about Darrell Williams is in any way a knock against CEH.
Okay. So Tyreek Hill has always been incredible and productive for the Chiefs. Last year, in just 12 games, he had 860 receiving yards and 7 touchdowns. I do wonder, and I asked Kyle to pull this morning. If you look at the top 8 wide receivers in terms of rankings this year, Tyreek Hill leads them with 19 touchdowns, which is one ahead of DeAndre Hopkins, Devontae Adams, and Michael Thomas over the past 2 seasons. But if you look at the number of games he has during the last 2 seasons versus those 3 with at least 6 catches, 11 for Tyreek Hill, 22 for DeAndre Hopkins, 20 for Devontae Adams, and 23 for Michael Thomas. Now, understand that Tyreek Hill did miss some time last year. So maybe the percentage of the games that he had at least 6 catches is closer. But still, like, those guys. So is the less impressive volume consistently totally offset by the big play propensity here for Tyreek Hill? Or is there a case for somebody who's a little bit more volume dependent to maybe slide ahead of him in our wide receiver ranks? Because right now he's 5, you have him 3, and Daniel has him 3 as well.
To clean that up, Field, he had 6 catches in just 4 of 12 games in 2019, knowing he only played 12 games, and he had 7 of 16 games in 2018, where he had 6 catches. Yeah. So percentage-wise, 11 of his 28 games.
You don't need to catch three passes on a series when the first one goes 80 yards for a touchdown. I mean, that's Tyreek Hill's game. Tyreek Hill is Deshaun Jackson just times a billion. I mean, right? He's got a quarterback that can literally throw it 80 yards from his knees.
Mm.
I mean, you know, he is truly at faster than ya, his old Twitter handle.
Yeah.
I mean, like I think he's probably the fastest player in the NFL, and if he's not, it's a very short list as to who's faster than him. And I don't think there's a defensive back that can keep up with him. And so you've got a guy that's got a cannon for an arm. You've got a play caller that's amazing at getting guys into space and creating mismatches. And yes, so the answer is do I think the volume, the quote, volume deficiency is masked by the big play propensity? I do.
Okay, fair enough. I am at 5 in my wide receiver rankings, which is I lean more towards the guys that I think are a greater weekly opportunity to get me 15 points than the guy who may, in some weeks, get me 31, and then in other weeks, because they have a lot of talent at wide receiver, might get me 7 or 8, which is not many.
How many active weeks did Tyreek Hill get less than 8 fantasy points? Someone look that up.
Figure that out.
Me?
Yeah.
On it.
Yeah. We can figure that out.
I say, who you have DeAndre Hopkins, I assume, higher than Tyreek Hill?
Goes Michael Thomas, Devontae Adams, Julio Jones, and then DeAndre Hopkins, and then Tyreek Hill.
I say Tyreek Hill has a better fantasy year than DeAndre Hopkins.
I say DeAndre Hopkins has a better fantasy year than Tyreek Hill.
Put it on the board.
Put it on the board.
Yeah, put it on the board.
Yeah.
That.
2 single-digit games for Tyreek, one in which he was hurt.
So
there you go.
Okay, one. Yeah,
you can't count the one he got hurt. That can happen.
Okay, well, how many did DeAndre and Michael Thomas had at least 15 in every single game? Like, you know, these guys
I have
are
Michael
all,
Thomas ranked number one overall.
I know, I'm just saying, but like, these are guys we're splitting hairs. How many did DeAndre Hopkins have it?
But your
right?
But your argument against Tyreek Hill is that he's a boomer bust guy, that he has these small single digit games. He had one.
Okay, the thing that I posited was, is the lack of volume enough to offset and split the difference? People are making this decision in the second round, right?
I'm with you. But
right. So right. That's why my case for DeAndre Hopkins or Devontae Adams or Julio Jones over Tyreek Hill is that volume is more significant. And oh, by the way, the touchdowns you're talking about, you're right. But DeAndre Hopkins has 1 fewer touchdowns than Tyreek Hill over the past 2 years? One.
He does. And
correct.
He's playing with a second-year quarterback that he hasn't played again in an offense that he's never played before.
That you're also calling the breakout. And breakout quarterback of the year, right? So, Daniel, what do you have?
Yeah, so I got a. We've talked about all of these Chiefs, right? And they're all fantastic. Any single one of these guys could finish top five at their position, and we would not at all be, you know, think that's weird.
Yep.
So when you go into drafts, we've had a lot of questions on Twitter. I could see putting a roster together with two or three Chiefs on it. Like, understanding if all these guys are going to be that big at their position, do you guys, from a strategy perspective, not, you know, decide, I don't want any more than two players from one team, I don't want any more than three players from one team? Or if they're going to be top 10, does it not make a difference to you?
So I'm going to fall back on a rule, and I want to shout out the great Chris Wesley, and we continue to wish him well in his fight with cancer. One of the great people in our industry and a very, very smart fantasy person, especially during, you know, he's more sort of real football focused than fantasy focused now. But
much love to Wes.
Much love to Wes, and he sort of lives by a rule for fantasy football that, generally speaking, a good strategy is to draft good football players, right? Like, if he's a good, talented player, then you have a better chance than not to return value. And all these guys are stars.
Yeah.
So am I going into a draft where I am intentionally adding every Chief or intentionally avoiding, let's say, drafting Tyreek Hill if I already landed Clyde Edwards-Helaire, or avoiding Patrick Mahomes if I already have Travis Kelce? No. I mean, if the chips fall that way, I'm okay with it. It might make for a hairy bye week, but besides that, I'm good with it.
Yeah, I agree with Field. I'm not necessarily going in targeting one particular team.
Sure.
There are some teams that make it real, unless I'm in something like Scott Fishbowl, where you're in a larger tournament and you need to sort of, or, you know, it's a best ball kind of thing where you need to have a different strategy to sort of stand out, where there's a lot of teams. So then, in that case, then I would target a team to stack, but it might not be the Chiefs because that's a little bit obvious. Like, you know, when you're in a large tournament, you need to have a team that is very different than everyone else's, right, to stand out. So, like, the Giants, weirdly, are an interesting team that you could easily stack. The Steelers, you know, like we talked about the Bengals. We both think the Bengals offense actually takes a real nice step this year and is actually going to be fantasy-wise. Like,
yeah.
So, the Steelers are a really interesting, to me, stack team. But, yes, like, you'd be happy if you had Travis Kelce on your team. You'd be happy if you had Patrick Mahomes on your team. You'd be happy if you had Tyreek Hill on your team. You'd be happy if you had CEH on your team. So if they were all on your team, like, that's not a bad thing. I'm not avoiding it, but it's rare that I'm sitting there specifically targeting it because, again, what happens if you get two-thirds of the way there and then someone takes Kelce the pick before you,
right,
or whatever?
Right. If it falls to you that way, you're not going to avoid it because of that, but you're not targeting it.
1,000%.
Cool. Yes. Awesome.
Interesting. Just looking back on Tyreek Hill for a second, who had four games with at least 15 points last year. So 1 in 3 weeks, you're getting at least 15 points for Tyreek Hill. Just saying. I'm just saying. I just think that maybe, you know, the idea that he's got like considerable weekly upside relative to someone like DeAndre Hopkins is maybe a little bit.
I think maybe it's risk. A bet that'll work. I think there is risk with DeAndre Hopkins that there isn't with Tyreek Hill.
Okay.
I want the guy in the same system with the same quarterback. He's the number one wide receiver on one of, if not the best passing offense in the NFL. And I love DeAndre Hopkins. He's an amazing wide receiver, and he's one of my favorite players to root for in the NFL. Mm. But the idea that there is no risk with a guy going to a brand new system and a brand new quarterback that has, there's a lot of other targets around him as well. You can't tell me there isn't. And you know, listen, I think,
just say, we'll see where it bears out. We got to keep moving here, but it'll be really interesting to see how that one shakes out. Another board bet in my favor. We're going to come back in just a moment.
I want a poll right now. Thirsty Kyle, who's right? Me or Field?
On it.
Tyreek Hill or DeAndre Hopkins? Who you want?
Well, you can create that poll. In the meantime, Stefania, first a word from you.
Yes, the Volvo XC40 has a place for everything, and I mean everything. With smart storage features like a wireless phone charger, a fold-out hook on the glove box for bags, card holder slots for IDs and parking passes, a compartment under the driver's seat for your tablet, and a rear cargo divider that folds up to keep things secure. The Volvo XC40 has a space for all your must-haves and then some.
All right, did you know that right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dog to make you breakfast in bed? Happy National Dog Day. With Belgian waffles and a fresh fruit compote? As nice as that sounds, that's probably never going to happen. But at least there's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. All right, last team in double trouble. I'm looking forward to this one here is the Denver Broncos. Really interesting team.
Did you know DeAndre Hopkins had 15 or fewer fantasy points in 7 of 16 games last year? 7 of 15 games last year.
So that means I will jump in between. I will put my mask on and come in between both of you if you do not stop bickering with each other.
So he had
eight fantasy points.
Oh, my goodness.
In the other, God, so he had 15 plus points in 8 games, right?
He had in 7.
You just said he had 15 or fewer in 7 of 15.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
then he had so, 8
right.
with
One
more
of them
than
was
15.
A 16-point game, but yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Tyreek Hill had 8 games with 15 or fewer points and 4 with more than 15.
Yeah.
So you just...
And still finished, I believe, higher than DeAndre Hopkins on a points per game basis last year.
God, Matthew, we've got to work on your math here. Let's talk about the Broncos before we get too far down that rabbit hole of math and long division.
I'm just saying if your big argument for DeAndre Hopkins is like he's super consistent and gives you like this first you kept moving the goalposts. First you said, well, it's these single digit games. We're like, all right, well, he only actually had one single digit game, Tyreek Hill. And then you're like, it's 15 points, and you're like, all right, well, actually DeAndre Hopkins, you know, about half the time didn't even get to that threshold. So it's just like, all right, like, I don't know.
Okay.
We haven't even talked about Julio yet.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
So the Denver Broncos this offseason, I thought surprisingly, made an investment in Melvin Gordon. 2 years and $16 million. They already had Philip Lindsay, who became the first undrafted player ever with at least 1,000 rushing yards in back-to-back seasons to begin his career. Are you concerned about the running back by committee, or do you think that Melvin Gordon has this job and it's clearly his, and Philip Lindsay is not a thing of the past, but he is a change of pace?
So somewhere in between. So he asked me a couple questions there. Do I think the job is clearly his? I don't.
Okay.
Do I think Philip Lindsay is a thing of the past? Kind of. I want to acknowledge there are reports out of Denver. We've heard coach speak saying like this is going to be a running back by committee and they plan to use both guys. But I'm a big believer in, to your point, follow the money on some level, right? They despite having a big year from Philip Lindsay last year, and despite a team that used an early draft pick on Royce Freeman, they went on to sign Melvin Gordon to big money last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think Philip Lindsay's a nice, he's a nice player, but he ain't Melvin Gordon. And I think a big argument that gets made is like, well, Philip Lindsay's going to take all the passing down work. Philip Lindsay had under 10 receiving yards in 10 of 16 games last year. I don't think Philip Lindsay, because he's small, I think people assume that he's like this great pass catcher. He's fine. But Melvin Gordon literally has close to 100 receptions in his last 24 games.
Yeah.
Melvin Gordon, I don't think people think of Melvin Gordon as a great pass catcher because, again, he's a bigger guy. He's a more physical guy. But Melvin Gordon's a very good pass catcher. And, again, he's played 12 games each of the last 2 years. He has, I want to say off the top of my head, 92 receptions combined his last 2 years. Like, he's like a 50-reception guy. So I don't totally buy the argument that Melvin Gordon's absolutely coming off the field on third down. I actually think the opposite. And I think when they get in close, it's going to Melvin Gordon. We expect this offense to be better this year. We think Noah Fant takes it another step. We think a full year of Drew Lock. We think it's a more efficient offense, adding, obviously, Judy and Hamler, and obviously they've got Sutton there. So we think this is a more efficient offense that's going to be scoring more. But when they get in close, they're going to give it to Melvin Gordon, who is one of the best goal line running backs in the NFL over the last 4 years. He has been a touchdown machine. That's been a big part of his fantasy value as have been the touchdowns, because he's not the most efficient guy. Like, he's a 4 yards a carry guy. So, I am more bullish on Gordon than not. Now, I still think Philip Lindsay gets 8 to 10 touches a game, so I think that's a little concerning. But the idea that it's a even split here, I don't buy.
Yeah, so I have Melvin Gordon ranked 21 in my running back, so not too far behind you at running back 18. We're in the same territory, and I want to buy into everything that you're saying, and it may be that I end up drafting him around his current ADP. I'm still sort of sorting through this one because it's just hard for me to envision that Philip Lindsay disappears. Now, 50-50 split is also hard for me to totally envision because they shouldn't have paid a guy $8 million per season. But just for fun, I had Kyle look this up, sort of build a blind resume, if you will. You look at two players in your last 31 games, and one of them averages 4.9 yards per carry. The other one averages 4.3. One of them averages the same number of yards per game, 66.1 apiece. Philip Lindsay has, he has a touchdown every 26 rushes. Melvin Gordon has one every 21.6 rushes. So, like, statistically, there are some similarities between these two that I guess I'm having a hard time envisioning Philip Lindsay being totally phased out, which I don't think you're suggesting. But I'm also opening my mind to the possibility that, like, if Melvin Gordon starts the season slow, could you see this being a hot hand situation where Philip Lindsay becomes the guy who has maybe 18 or 20 carries in a given week?
I think it's hard to imagine that. Listen, they want to win ball games. So if Melvin Gordon completely falls off a cliff and Lindsay is crushing it, then sure. I guess I just don't see that happening. I mean, starting in week 7 last year, Philip Lindsay was averaging under 5 receiving yards a game. Like, I actually think, here's the thing, if you look at Drew Lock, if you look at sort of the Drew Lock numbers, Drew Lock in terms of target share, 20% target share to running backs last year, Drew Lock. And so again, like, I'm actually, my pro Melvin Gordon argument is I think he's used much more in the passing game than Philip Lindsay or than other people expect.
Okay. Well, let's get Stefania in the mixture because I know she has something she wants to add on these two running backs.
I actually am going to back Matthew up here on a tidbit that I got from Jeff Legwald, who covers the Broncos for us and does an excellent job. And he's been there. He's as dialed into the Broncos as anyone. And he said that Melvin Gordon's looked really good in camp, especially as a receiver, that they look to split the rundowns pretty even, but that Gordon will definitely pick up the work as a receiver and probably get more snaps, especially when they're in three wide sets.
Okay, so I think, Stefan, you actually kind of made the point that both arguments for us is that, like, what I'm
both, right.
Right. Matthew is saying he's a better receiver, which we are in agreement on. I'm also saying that, like, God, I still wouldn't be stunned if there was a week where Philip Lindsay gets 18 carries or 20 carries. And that's the part that has me a bit nervous. Again, my ranking is not totally reflective of, like, massive nerves. I'm just pointing out that, like, of all the backup running backs in the NFL, Philip Lindsay is one of the better ones that we're going to see right now.
Maybe, but I mean, like, look, I have him at 38. You have him at 37. His ADP is 32. You and I are both behind where he's going. And we're both behind consensus.
What do you have, Daniel?
This might be a dumb question, and this will be the last question I ask, I promise, because I know I've jumped in a lot this podcast.
That's okay.
But I'm curious.
Dumb question is sort of on brand for you.
It sort of is. So Melvin Gordon was running back 12 in total points from week 5 on from when he returned, okay? And he was splitting time with Austin Eckler, who's really freaking good.
Yep.
So if he's going to have a whole season in Denver, this is nothing against Philip Lindsay, but if he was running back 12 in a running back by committee with Austin Eckler, don't we think that he's going to be better than running back 12, splitting time with a less talented running back?
Daniel, it was one of the great, and this is anecdotal. This is not something that I have measured out statistically. The Chargers had one of the great game script opportunities for running backs we've seen in quite some time last year. Constantly behind, not incredible depth at wide receiver, and a quarterback who, as we recently said, his new offensive coordinator, Nick Sirianni, acknowledges one of the greatest ever at getting running backs the football in the passing game. So you're logical in wondering why that's the case. I think a lot of things just fell very favorably for Melvin Gordon from a game script standpoint last year to have that late season surge.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, and the other thing is again, it's touchdowns, right? And we expect the touchdown, but touchdowns can be fluky from year to year. And so you've got a new team and you don't know how it's going to pan out. We don't know what, you know, the Broncos offensive line, we'll see. I think there's some question marks there. And so, yes, he's got that potential, and which is why I'm more bullish on Gordon than not.
Right.
But to say that there's no concerns with Melvin Gordon, I think, is...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Jeez, did things work well in his favor last... He had one 100-yard game last year to Melvin Gordon. I mean, I wonder if, like, week five on, it's just, like, so many studs got hurt, because when I hear wide running back 12, I'm like, really? I don't remember him being that good, and looking at the numbers, it really wasn't that good. We got to go to the wide receivers, and Courtland Sutton makes your hate list, Matthew. You and I, this is when we were definitely on different pages in terms of value. So I have him at wide receiver 15, which is also his ADP right now. You've got him at wide receiver 25. What makes you nervous about Courtland Sutton this year?
So a bunch of different things, right? And by the way, Mike Clay agrees with you. Mike Clay loves, if Mike Clay was doing a love-hate list, Courtland Sutton would make his love.
Yep.
So my concern with Courtland Sutton has nothing to do with the player. Okay. I think he's very talented.
Gotcha.
I think he is very, very talented. My concern with Courtland Sutton is two things. Number one is, so, volume, right? Last year he had three games all season with just over five receptions. And that was with a 26% target share. He got a massive target share. And still last year, finished as wide receiver 27. So with a massive target share, he was wide receiver 27. Now he comes into a year where it's still likely to be a run-first offense. Like, Denver was 27th in pass attempts last year, okay? It's likely to be a run-first offense, and now we just talked about how good Melvin Gordon is a pass catcher. We expect a big second-year surge from Noah Fant. They add Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler. I just don't think he gets the same amount of target share. So I think his target share comes down on a run-first offense. And then where you have to take him, you mentioned running back wide receiver 15. Like, his ADP, he's going ahead of guys like Tyler Lockett, of Terry McLaurin, of guys that I believe are the true number one. He's the number one on their team, so that's not a good argument. But the guys that I think have much higher upside, much easier paths to significant target volume.
Interesting.
Like, he's ahead of Cooper Kupp. He's ahead of Robert Woods. He's ahead of all these guys that I would prefer to have on my team. So that's why he makes my hate list.
I'm very, very bullish on the talent. And I know that you said this is not about the talent. I'm just telling you, I'm very, very bullish on the talent. And I think a lot of that target share and the disparity between his target share and the number of games with at least five catches, a lot of that is attributable to poor quarterback play, because they were last in terms of deep passing attempts. So it's not like they're high-risk throws or low efficiency throws that he's relying upon. I think this is more just bad quarterback play for much of last year that I'm banking on being better. And again, simple thing for me. I'm just a believer in the player. But ardent. Yes.
You're taking him over.
Yes,
like...
correct. Yes.
Okay.
Those guys, top 15. That's where I have him. I have him at number 15. Yes, I am taking him over the players that you are describing, that you mentioned. Tyler Lockett's, yes. Terry McLaurin, yes. All those guys that you mentioned, I am comfortable taking.
Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp.
I have Woods ahead of him.
Okay.
Yep. Cooper Kupp, yes, I'm ahead of. I have Courtland Sutton ahead of Cooper Kupp. How about Noah Fant? One more player here. This is a breakout pick that a lot of people are in on, Matthew. And speaking of talent, like, this is one where no matter what he did last year, he's a unique talent. Big athletic freak, a guy who last year had one of the great highlights from tight ends, a catch against the Cleveland Browns for like 78 yards and a score. Do we think there's enough volume here for Noah Fant to be a breakout player and also be a top 10 weekly fantasy tight end?
I do. AJ Brown. Do you have Courtland Sutton higher than AJ Brown? Because that's where he's going in ADP.
I have, if they're like, they're right next to each other.
Right.
I'm not sure who's ahead of either.
Calvin Ridley. I'm ahead of
Calvin. I've had Calvin Ridley. Yeah.
How about Noah Fant, though? Crazy. Are we talking about Noah Fant?
Yeah. So Noah Fant. Yes, the answer to your question is yes. Look, we had some big plays there. There's not a ton of stats from last year that you can sort of point to. Like, all the stats are inflated by a couple of big plays. You're just banking on the talent. There was a reason why he was a first-round pick last year. We expected to have I think he is a very talented young player, and I do think that the volume for a tight end to be a fantasy-relevant player is not nearly the same as the volume necessary for a wide receiver. Because there's a lot less competition at tight end than there is at wide receiver this year. So I have Noah Fant as a sleeper this year. I mean, a lot of people do. I'm as a top 10 tight end. He made my love list. So, yes, I'm all in on Noah Fant, who I think is phenomenally talented. Just loved what I saw on tape both in college and last year.
Yeah, certainly a very fun player to watch, and the Broncos need it from him. Because, you know, they may be a run-heavy team by design, but they do play in a division that we know includes the highest of high-flying offenses in the Chiefs, and we think the Raiders could be a little bit more fun on offense this year, and we'll see on the Chargers. But if they play games where the game script is in their favor of fantasy points, it may be that they need a guy like Noah Fant to be very heavily involved. We're going to have some trivia in just a little bit, but first, a couple of words from some friends, starting with you, Daniel.
When it comes to scoring great hires for your business, you may be up against some obstacles, like lots of applicants. But finding the right ones for your job is tough. Or finding time to hire while you're running your business, plus trying to ensure workplace safety. That's why you need ZipRecruiter on your team. No matter the industry, healthcare to manufacturing to business services, ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster and easier. And now you can try it for free at ziprecruiter.com/06010. In fact, check out this stat. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So add ZipRecruiter to your roster to help you win the hiring game. Try ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ziprecruiter.com/06010. That's ziprecruiter.com/06010. ziprecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Matthew Berry, why don't you tell us about one of our other favorite sponsors right now?
A lot of people are missing the fun and excitement of the ballpark right now. It just hasn't felt like summer. But just because you can't be in the stadium doesn't mean you can't bring that classic ballpark feeling home. Best way to do that is with Ballpark Buns and Rolls. Ballpark and the ballpark go together like baseball and summer. They're an American pastime and America's favorite buns and rolls. They've been an essential part of celebrations, big and small, for a long, long time. Nothing worse than your bun breaking under that pressure. Guess what? Ballpark buns and rolls never fall apart. They're always freshly baked, always soft, always delicious. Ballpark buns and rolls are a great way to get a carefree taste of summer any time of the year. Whether shared at a backyard barbecue, fall tailgate, or any manner of celebration year-round, you can't help but enjoy yourself when enjoying a ballpark bun creation. So next time you're picking up essentials for grilling, tailgating, a little slow cooker action, or even a nostalgic night in, make sure you grab Ballpark buns and rolls. Find them wherever you grocery shop.
All right, let's head on over to the bunker for the Geico-presented trivia question of the day.
We do have trivia today, and we also have trivia standings. You guys were asking about them. We deliver, so you will see that graphic up on the screen right now as we get into trivia today.
I can't read. Secret Squirrel, I can't read. Who's in first place?
Depends how you define first place, if it's win percentage or number correct.
I think it's number correct.
Then Matthew Berry leads with 5. Stefania Bell, 4, but Stefania's...
She's on a hot streak, though.
Leading in win
Stefania's
percentage.
Stefania's heating up. Okay?
Yes, she is.
She fine. Is. I am 2 behind at 3.
To be honest...
Yeah. Look, let's be clear about this, though. I'm dumb with, and I have no trivia sense. Stefania has like 25 degrees and speaks 18 languages.
So
she should be crushing us. The fact that I'm anywhere within the neighborhood of Stefania is a loss for Stefania.
I got to stand up for Stefania because Stefania didn't do the first couple of trivia questions. Is that not correct?
I'm just saying, Stefania, you should be wiping the floor with us, and the fact that you're not is a victory for me.
All right, Kyle, what is the question of the day?
Knowledge and trivia are not the same.
I like that.
Interesting. I want a board bet with Cortland Sutton.
You're just not going to let that go.
Go ahead. Just saying.
Tomorrow's trivia sponsored by Cortland Sutton. Today, over the past 15 seasons, there have been 4 instances in which a player under 6 feet tall caught at least 6 touchdown passes in 4 straight years. Tyreek Hill owns an active streak. So there's 3 others. I need 2 of them from you guys. Give me 2 of the other 3 players under 6 feet tall. 6 touchdown catches in at least 4 straight seasons.
Okay, so 3 players.
Stefania.
We need 2 to win.
Stefania, when you whisper, we
still Stefania, hear. Yeah, Stefania, we can hear you. Stefania, what's happening over there right now?
Well, I'm trying to
just say it out loud.
Rico in for National Dog Day.
Rico, come here, buddy.
Rico in for National Dog. But so
this
so
I'm just trying to follow this question. Are they active players or just players that these are not active players?
Not necessarily. Over the last 15 seasons, players that have done it. Tyreek Hill has the
I'm more concerned
streak.
With Rico right now. So is he going to join the show or no?
6 feet or under?
Under 6 feet.
Well, he's so good about staying in his bed that he doesn't want to come. I'm trying to coax him up to get him in the shot, and he's like leaving his toes on the bed because he knows he's supposed to stay there.
Aw, what a good
so
boy.
Good.
All right, in the interest of integrity, the graphic flashed, and I saw the answer.
I did too.
And I am going to abstain from answering this question.
I'm not.
I can't see.
Okay. I'm not. It's not my fault the graphic flashed.
So I'm going to abstain.
That's not fair.
And I'm not going to take any credit for any answers here. So, Stefania, why don't you venture a guess, if you like, and if we can litigate
see the graphic,
whether.
So.
Yeah, right. So, what were your guesses? Just curious.
Well, I only had two that I could come up with that I thought, and they were Antonio Brown and Steve Smith, and I'm stuck on a third.
Those are really good guesses.
Stefania! Off the top rope! Yeah, Stefania really nailed them! Yes, Stefania! Those are both correct!
Is that right?
Those are. I'll let Kyle tell the news.
Both short. That's yeah. Why. Yep.
Those really good. I wrote down Antonio Brown and Wes Welker.
Oh.
After I saw the graphic, but again, like, it's phone a friend. Like, it's not my fault. If they're going to flash it, I'm using all the abilities.
No, that's okay. Not fair.
We're going to have
you
to decide. See, that's
like I think we each get a half a point.
I think Stefania like gets a full point, and you guys get a half a point because Stefania did it without.
I don't want any points. I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna get any points.
You were writing down your answer before you saw it.
Penalize Matthew or Field.
I have other guesses, Stefania. And they're not right. So yeah. I'm not gonna try
you
to.
You either have to null the question or, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, because it's not fair. Like, we didn't get a chance to answer.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I have an idea. You ready?
Yes. Stefania didn't get to do the first couple trivia questions. Maybe you guys sit this one out and she takes this one.
I think this is the answer. Stefania gets a point. I get 0 points and a missed guest. Matthew gets 0 points, but it does not count toward his winning percentage.
Ooh.
See what I mean?
I'm okay with that.
I'm sure you are.
Yeah.
Stefania, happy dog day to you. And that Rico, is,
that's
great
fine.
Job on
that's
trivia.
True. Stefania did not get to participate in the first two questions or whatever.
NBA
so I'll
Jam.
Allow it, but, you know. It's
NBA Jam style Stefania is on fire. We are back on Thursday with something that's not double trouble for Field, Matthew, Daniel, everybody else. We'll talk to you then.
Rotopass.com. Peace out.
Give me grief for being on SportsCenter for 45 seconds.
I think you could do better than me because I don't think you could.
Jailbait Field Yates.
You're terrible at hashtag improv.
At Field Yates. At Field Yates.
Stefania Bell.
Oh, don't let Barry convert you.
Secret Squirrel Daniel Dunn.
Make it happen.
Mediocre Fantasy Advice.
You're older than people.
That never stops.
Loyal 06010 listeners.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.